You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hypothetical.
Welcome to Scam Low.
I'm Caitlin Brodnick.
I'm Sue Smith.
And we love scams.
And we love scams.
Guys, we love scams. We love you. Wow, we still exist.
Speak for yourself. I might hate you. I secretly hate all of you.
That's true.
I mean,
existence is insane, you know?
I have a lot of subtle resentments.
I will happily share that I learned during quarantine not to talk shit about people.
But do it. Please.
Well, I realized this, and this is so embarrassing. And it happens to do with my relationship. I was talking to a friend today that, like, I was sort of understood or thought the way that, like, you add value or fun or spunk to a conversation is, like, talking drama and bringing up shit and being like, and can you believe this happened? That only just recreates so much stress in my body, like in my mind. It's not actually like a fun thing. It actually makes me go backwards and then recreate those scenarios in my head and go crazy.
And you relive it. I always thought that the way you related to new coworkers was to talk shit on other people.
I thought you were saying new Coke dealers. The way to relate with a new Coke dealer, you really got to talk shit about their
coworkers. A little different. No, new coworkers. You always talk shit about, like, your coworkers. But then I think that's a bad idea. I think that's dumb because, like, you never know what people's allegiances are.
You don't know.
They're going to think you're the one that talks shit and it makes you look bad. So
no, I know, guys. I learned not to talk shit. How old am I? In my 30s.
In my 30s. It took a long ass time.
The talking shit.
Katie, are you in therapy? You sound like you're back in therapy. But that is such, like, an amazing insight that,
it blew my mind.
That you're bringing their point of view into it, and then it's going to make you more mad about other things. I've never thought about it like that.
Oh, it totally. I think I have this feeling that I only learned this in quarantine because we're alone so much, and there's so much thinking we can do. That I have this, like, extreme fear, and maybe it comes with scams, maybe it comes with this idea that, like, people know more and I don't want to be left out in the cold and I don't want to be the one who doesn't get it. But I have this concept that, like, if I'm not ready to, like, be upset and know the justice of something, then someone's going to get it over on me, or something's going to get, like, years from now, they're going to go, she should have known, you know, Katie should have known. She'd always acted that way. And now she knows. Well, I've done tons of things. I've been a drunk. I've spent all my money. I've kicked people.
I think it comes from living in New York too, because someone is always trying to get something over on you in New York. When I first got sober, I also first started doing improv, and I was just talking about my aunt to anyone who would listen. I was just talking and talking about my feelings. I thought everybody was talking about it. I remember I was in the green room for an improv show at UCB, and I was like, after the show, like, just mouth vomiting to Don Finelli about, like, oh, I don't know how I did, and I felt really uncomfortable up there, and blah, 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 blah. And he's like, yeah, You should figure that out.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, cool.
Oh, point God. Taken. That's like, then I stopped talking to
I'm
people.
I'm not equipped for this.
Not my job.
Not my job. But there I is this it. Idea, and I was talking to Alan about it a ton, that like in society, women think getting together, friends think venting, like getting it out. And I want everyone to vent to me. I love hearing a shit story. I love hearing somebody trash talk an issue. I love the gossip. So I'm like, vent it out. I'm a great, you know, person to vent it to. But I need to put a lid on my venting, because a lot of times the problem's already been solved or it's past and I'm just re-bringing it back up.
Re-traumatizing. Wait, I have a question for you too. My husband and I will talk shit to each other and we're like, should we not do that in front of our baby? Like in front of our kid? Because like if we're hanging out with people and then we leave and then we're talking shit about them, he's going to hear us and be like, don't you not like those people?
Only until he's 3 years old.
Okay.
Like just at 3 years old, Lewis is listening to everything. And at two, didn't really care coming in and out. I mean, at two, was when he said, fuck, oh, hell, oh, shit. Like, he did repeat my terrible language, but didn't really know what it meant. And that was my fault.
That's cute.
Because
I
am fine. Horrible, like, horrible mouth. But now he's like, I said the other day, oh, we spend all this time with this person with our two friends. And I didn't say who. And Lewis goes, oh, Chelsea and Sully? Like, he filled it in. And
oh, my gosh.
I was like, and I remember sitting on the floor listening to all of my mom's phone conversations and adoring it and just loving how juicy it was. So I say three. Don't worry until you're three.
Okay. Okay. Great. So I will continue to talk shit.
Keep going. Three.
But it's not like, I mean, but sometimes you've got to talk shit. Like if somebody's wearing something weird or whatever, or they say something dumb, you got to process that.
If somebody wrongs you, you got to be like, I don't like that girl anymore. Here's the thing too, guys. And then we will finally get to our topic today.
We'll bring our guest on.
Have we seen anybody else? Really? No, just each other. During quarantine, there's been such an absence of people and influences and pressure and anxiety and other sort of things like infiltrating your psyche, that now anytime something is sort of like off, or you meet with somebody where you're like, oh, that was kind of an awful experience, it's so much more shocking than before. I think pre-quarantine, I had dealt with so many like assholes or like bad attitudes or like negative people, that now it's me and my three-year-old and then and my husband. And then when somebody's negative to me, I'm like, oh, that's a whole
You've been cleansed.
I really have been cleansed. And so now getting back into the real world, there's a big part of self-protection that is involved. We all have to look at ourselves with kid gloves, I think. Or just me.
But that's good.
I can't speak for everyone. Anyway, my God.
We have a wonderful guest today.
Our guest is brings such joy to Sue and I. We were texting about the guest and we were like, oh my God, I love him. No, I love him. He's the best.
I love him.
He's the best person ever.
We know him from the UCB from a long time, but you may have seen him on the Chris Gethard show. You may have seen him on Broad City. You may have heard his podcast, Self-Medicated. Please welcome Merv Meyer.
Our good friend's name we did not confirm.
Yes, Merv is good enough. You nailed that. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Oh,
absolutely.
Gosh.
And I totally agree that one of the wonderful things about a spouse is you're able to talk shit to them. So don't ever stop talking shit. I mean, if you can't talk shit with your spouse about other people, then who can you talk shit with?
I know, but the baby, you don't want to taint the baby's opinion.
That's true.
You know?
That's
3 years old,
Sue.
You got 3 years old.
I got 3 years. Okay.
You got three.
Yeah.
Lewis watched Real Housewives for the first 6 months of his life.
He did.
I was like, this is what we're watching and this is what we're experiencing. Yeah, he's the most empathetic, loving kid ever. And he watched Real Housewives scream at each other for this first 6 months of his life.
I love that.
That's a crash course in shit talking for sure.
Yeah, a crash course in empathy, emotions.
Yeah.
Guys,
all of it.
I will also be eating spaghetti during this podcast and then muting myself because I have not eaten all day, because that's what happens. That's what happens.
I'm also going to be drinking a LaCroix and lightly burping into the microphone. So.
it's like up close and personal.
I'll be smoking and nodding.
Oh, I love.
cool.
Watching you smoke, Murph, is the most peaceful thing to me. Like, I know smoking is technically not that bad, but I love watching people smoke. I also love smoking, but I love watching people smoke.
But wait, are you smoking a cigarette?
Yeah, just a cigarette. Yeah.
Wow, that's so vintage.
Indoors?
It's very old fashioned. It is very, I know.
Nobody does that
anymore. I know, it's nuts. We've taken it. We're time traveling. I figured it fits the scam. We're
time traveling today, guys.
We're time traveling. Wait, before we get into the scam, can you tell us a little bit about your podcast?
Yeah, it's kind of there's a lot of podcasts out there that are about addiction and recovery. And, you know, there's comedians who talk a lot about these issues. They seem to kind of be a part of the community, as you both know. But I feel like, you know, a lot of those are through the more abstinent, sober perspective rather than kind of like someone who's more managing their substance use through kind of harm reduction methods. And so I still drink booze and smoke some weed, but, you know, no more heroin for me.
Good.
I introduced myself on the show as a former heroin addict, current alcoholic. But like the joking aside from that is more just like, you know, I manage my more harmful drug use through, you know, other ways, which, you know, harm reduction is kind of just each individual their own kind of path on what, you know, what they need to do for themselves to get their kind of own life in order rather than like a one size fits all kind of thing.
So, yeah. And in sobriety in the program, like we were always like, if that works for you, like, honestly, I believe there's so many paths to sobriety and recovery, like whatever works.
Really,
seriously.
Whatever works. Yep. If you are able to function without the use of the most destructive substance that you used to require, that's amazing. It's such a blessing. It's so incredible. And you casually mentioned heroin, but heroin's so not casual. It's so intense for you to be like, well, I'm doing, but you know, that's such a huge triumph. I'm so happy.
Yeah. Thank you totally. So much. Yeah. And I feel like that's the kind of, you know, the love that's for everyone's own, you know, programs. Like we all know when we're using a substance that's, you know, more harmful or we're doing it for the reasons. Like we all know when we're running ourselves off the rails.
Yeah. Go where it's bleeding.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think that's kind of and it's all encompassing again, even within like, you know, harm reduction strategies, there is, if abstinence is your goal, then that's like part of it as well. It's just kind of each person, their own path, which I think is encouraging. It depends. Yeah. It depends on the brain.
Yeah. I don't think I could moderation with the booze because like, there's a point for me where I get to like, fuck it. I'm just going to have like 17 drinks. You know what I mean? There's not like, yep. I'm going to have 3 drinks and then I'm done. I just, my brain doesn't work like that.
No. And that's a beautiful thing to realize about yourself too. You know, I think some people always try to do the dance where they won't admit that, you know, to themselves. So that's all, you know, that's, again, that's just for each person. It's amazing that you know, came to terms with that. And we're like, I just can't do this. So why do you keep, you know, testing the
yeah,
waters?
I just want more people to be like, oh, I'm fucked in this way. Like, can we just admit it? Can we stop trying to like pretend that we have some like book guru that's going to just like, I'm just suck at this. Like this, I'm not good at.
I'm fucked in this way is actually an amazing philosophy. Yeah. That just cuts through all the bullshit. Who needs all the guru talk when you're just like,
just
which way are you fucked in?
Yeah,
figure it
this
out.
This is the way I'm fucked in. And that's it. I had a memory. We were watching something. And it's about martinis. My number one thing for my addiction was anything free. So we went to a bar and they were giving us free martinis and I had 7 and went to the hospital because that's what happens. And I was talking to my husband who has none of this, like zero of this is so, he's like, I get kind of fuzzy. I don't feel like it. I don't feel like drinking more. I was like, you're an idiot. We have alcohol in the house. You should drink it all.
Yeah. I purely just black out. Not good. Don't remember anything. Mm-mm. Anyway, Murph, one thing I love about you, you're a smoker, you're from Pennsylvania, and there's like something very like particular about that. I'm also from Pennsylvania, and I really relate to that. It's very endearing.
Where in Pennsylvania are each of you from? Because I know our listeners are also from Pennsylvania.
Oh, I'm from Northwestern, like up near Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I'm Northeastern. Cross up by Wilkes-Barre Scranton there.
And so you've brought us a Pennsylvania scam, fittingly.
Hell yeah.
Which is exciting.
Yes. Yeah, it's a legendary Pennsylvania scam. It's known as the 666 fix. And it was it has to do with the Pennsylvania lottery. So in 1980, there was a group of people who got together, which was headed by the announcer of the nightly lottery, which is amazing. And they kind of conspired to fix the daily number. So when I was growing up, like, My dad used to play the daily number like every day. So the Pennsylvania, and Sue, you may have heard the jingle as well.
I was just going to mention that.
Do it.
The Pennsylvania lottery.
Yeah. No, it's just drilled into our brains in Pennsylvania. So that was like my childhood growing up. I used to, that
Can
was
I
like
sing
a,
the
like
Maryland
a Pavlov
lottery?
Situation.
Really quick.
Oh, yes.
The Maryland
please.
Lottery. It could be you. It could be you. The Maryland lottery. It could be you.
And you're like, that's good.
It could be me.
Sorry.
It could be. They're not wrong.
Thank you for letting me share.
Love a good jingle. Yeah. So that was kind of drilled into my brain as soon as you hear that every evening come on the local news there, and they do the drawing, the live drawings, which is, used to be such a great spectacle. It's not as exciting, I guess, now. I don't know why they've kind of toned it down, but it used to be like a circus sideshow situation. Yeah. A lot of lights flashing and, just very exciting. My dad played that like every day. And it was just the daily number. So it's just three balls come up. It's the old, balls in the air chamber there. And they have like an elderly witness like each night come in because it's like to benefit older Pennsylvanians.
Elderly Pennsylvanians, which
for the old people, they've made it this long. Right. Let's let them watch some balls fly in the air.
Yeah. Let's get those social security checks on the line. Right. Let's gamble those. So they would bring an old witness out to pull the balls each night. And on this particular evening, this group conspired to fix it. And what they did was they just like weighed the balls. So this was like a really genius approach, I think, to a scam. Kind of has this like degenerate Ocean's 11 vibe to it.
I'll take it.
And it was kind of like, yeah. And so it was a very ragtag group they put together. So they thought they had like the security on lockdown, but it was basically just like two people with keys. One was like worked at the television studio, which this was in Pittsburgh. And then one of them was like a lottery official or whatever. So very easily bought. So they got those two people on board, and then they got the security person at the studio. And then there was the announcer, like I said, who was kind of masterminding the whole thing. So they weighted the balls down. They got like identical looking ping pong balls and they injected them with a little latex paint.
Wow.
On the numbers, the fours and the sixes, so that they would then go out that night and buy like as many, tickets for combinations to cover their bets on that, so that they would rise up. They had enough weight that they would rise into the chamber quicker than the other balls. Yeah.
So they're heavier, so they'd rise up quicker.
Oh, I thought it was the four and sixes were the ones that didn't have any weight on them.
Actually, you're right. My physics are shit.
No, that's okay. Because I just want to.
Because the heavier balls would come up. They would bounce around a little, but they didn't go up far. Yeah. So, that's right. That's what it was.
There were all these I just read briefly, but Murph is the expert. But there are all these combinations of four and sixes that people put in. And what I thought was so cool that I read is that the guy was the art director who doctored it. Like, he's made them. He's like, so look, dope. This is my craft. I will go down with it.
Yes, right, yes. Right. Which gets back to the Ocean's 11 move, because you're like looking at who the players are, and you're like, well, we got to get the art director on board with this, because he's going to be the one who can fix
this. He really can draw four like no one else. Looks...
Yeah. But also, I'm surprised that there was an art director. The aesthetic was so
the biggest thing of the night. It was a circus show.
Okay, yeah, you're right. No?
It was like a velvet cape with a couple of colored light bulbs. Like, right. He really went.
And he really also wore a velvet cape.
Yeah.
He was very proud. Yes. He walked around town in his velvet cape. He was special.
He was. So, yeah. So he was on board with the fix, and he figured out exactly like the weight, because they still needed it to look like, when the balls are banging around in the chamber there, it needed to look as real as possible. So they weighted down just enough so that those fours and sixes would be pulled out of the mix, which was crazy. So then, of course, in like a devilish satanic twist, it was three sixes that actually ended up coming
up,
which there was still, obviously the odds were weighted, but there still was a chance it could be three fours or
it's
four.
Sue
six,
Smith,
four.
You're calling her numbers. She would have won.
Those are my numbers. 666.
How old were you? Why weren't you playing?
-2.
Yeah, you were there in spirit. Your satanic spirit was with that drawing. Yeah, so they nailed the three sixes. But the problem, of course, is like with everything, they had too many people involved in this. And then it also got leaked where... There was in Philly, there was one of the families, one of the crime families there was running numbers like a separate thing that still had to do with the lotto, but they were laying better odds. Because the other thing I just want to acknowledge here, too, is that the state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth, is running their own racket here, because this is like 1,000-to-1 odds to hit the daily number, and it pays out 500-to-1. So it's like already a terrible like scam in and of itself, like just even if you're saying it's done fairly.
Wait,
it's
what?
Still just
what does
awful
that
odds.
Mean to us who are
Can
horrible
you expand,
numbers?
Explain that.
So like so the odds of you get even money. So if you put down like you get 500-to-1 on your money. So if you put a dollar down, you win 500 bucks. So there's a one in 1,000 chance of winning the daily number, like hitting the combination, because there's only, the balls or whatever, 0 through 9. So whatever the combinations work out, it's like you have a 1 in 1,000 chance, but if you win, you only get paid 500-to-1.
So it should be 1 in 1,000?
Well, I mean, for them to take their cut of it, like any casino, it should be like, what would be reasonable to me would be something like 900. you know, like it, or if they paid you, like, you know, so if you bet a dollar instead of only making $5, if you win, you should make like, you know, you should get like 900 to one on it. So then they still make money off of doing it, but they don't make an obscene amount of money. Like that, those odds are like, you know, for every day that there's even a winner, which there's not even a winner necessarily. But if there is, they only get paid, you know, 500 to one on their money, which is bad odds. Those are just bad.
Interesting. Go ahead, Sam.
And it was always they were always like, this benefits older Pennsylvanians, but they never went into any detail. So like, I don't think it really benefited anybody. No.
A couple of walkers are donated. Like,
it's
maybe
more for
like,
senior awareness.
Let's see those.
So that you're aware. Some oxygen tanks.
There is. Yeah. It's to fight ageism. Yeah. It's just like there are seniors out there and let's not.
Here they
just
are
throw
standing right next to our balls. I know you're focused on the money, but please look at these seniors. Well, and,
they're real.
And 1,000 to 1, isn't that good odds for a state? Think of how many
people, but it all depends on the payout. Mm. No, I know it's true. It's not terrible. Well, it also could be split. Like again, like, you know, depending on if multiple people win. But yeah, I think that the 1,000 to 1 is not even necessarily awful. It's just what you would get paid. Like if you play that every day, you know, because my dad hit a couple times
like
too.
Your dad.
Like, it just doesn't. Yeah. Cause he's playing every day for 40 years. He's going he'll benefit himself at some point. He's been playing so damn long.
He is the older Pennsylvanian.
Yeah. He is.
It benefits them because they play. All of them play. So that was the scam. So but what I love about it was just that it was always notorious. Because Sue, I don't know if they have this out in Erie way too, but we have a lot of church bazaars. I tell people about like bazaars and stuff like outside of Pennsylvania. And I don't know if it's a regional thing.
But do you have turkey parties?
No.
You didn't have a turkey party?
No.
I think it's probably a similar thing. It's like around Christmas and Thanksgiving, people get together in fire halls and churches and they like raffle shit off like guns and turkeys and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
We don't call them turkey party, but it's a similar kind of thing. It's all for the church bazaar.
So
it's always
like
a greasy food for the awareness. And all the seniors are working, all the booths there, and they have like a big six wheel. And they have like instant bingo tickets and they'll have like
the same thing. That's the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Yeah. So those are great. Cause you just get like a beer, there's a beer tent and then it's like potato pancakes and halushki and pierogies and all the, you know, all the good foods. So it's like greasy food, gambling and booze for church for Jesus. So it's a fun mix of things. So, you know, growing up, I remember there was a scandal. Also, someone tried to fix this much smaller stakes than the 666 fix, but There was a group of people who they sold big six wheels and they were weighted. So there was like a lot of like whispers always where you're like, oh, are you going to the right bazaar? Are you going to the like Holy Trinity Bazaar? Are you going to the St. Ignatius Bazaar? Like they have the big six wheel that's weighted. But then people are telling you numbers. And you're like, that's not even that. You're just trying to get action on the big six.
Wow. At a church.
All
this at a church meetup.
Well, I don't know about you, but at our turkey parties, there's some big ticket items. There's some expensive ass guns on ours.
Yes, all the big guns are up for grabs.
Literal
at
big
the turkey
guns.
Party. It's so funny. Yeah. And yeah, of course, like, you know, you're saying like the odds of all this stuff is you're just like, no one really asks one layer deeper until someone like scams the thing. But otherwise, you're just like, yeah, it just vaguely benefits the church or the elderly or whatever it is. But like, no one goes that one step further to be like, wait, how is this working?
In what way?
That's so funny.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
So this 666 one, did it just occur once?
Yeah, it was a one night drawing, I believe. Yeah, it was 1980, I want to say in April. Mm-hmm. I think it was coming up. Oh my, it was 2 days. It was, I'm trying to do my math here. What are we, 41? Yeah, 41 years ago, 2 days ago. It was April 24th, it says, 1980. So, I don't know what the significance of that is, but
it's
like,
significant.
Wait, is today April 24th?
Yeah.
So it was 41 years ago. It was one night. They geared up for this particularly. They did a lot of you know, mock drawings to make sure that the balls were weighted properly and everything. And you know, you got to go live. It's got to be, you know, it's got to all be in place. So they went out and, like I was saying, it leaked to a lot of people around Pennsylvania that all of a sudden, oh shit, there's this, you know, fix. So let's get what are the numbers? So I think too many people ended up finding out about it. And there was just a lot of erratic betting because at that point it was popular. I mean, they say that the numbers drew more than like, you know, the news, people would just tune in all over Pennsylvania. They were getting like 4 million viewers on this, like live, like just regularly for the lottery. So that's the level that people are gambling.
I love also that they're bringing that's their true. Families and they're like, look, guys, this is a family affair. We're all yes. going to go in on this together. Like, don't tell anybody except your husband and his mother. And they're like, well, don't tell anybody except the church well, exactly. lady and the senior we're helping. You know, like, I love it.
Yep. That's the exact problem that leaked out. So then everyone starts hearing like, oh, you hear about this fix. And you're like, well, what are the numbers, man? Like, what am I supposed to be betting here? So enough people apparently found out about it that there was so many combinations of fours and sixes, just like millions of those. So I think what was up for grabs is like some of the people in Philadelphia, when they found out about it, I think they said it in the Philly area, there were probably like 14,000 tickets that were specifically four and six, like bought. Yeah. And they were like, something seems funky here. Yeah.
It's like they were so proud of what they'd done. They just told everybody and it got out through the whole state.
Right. That's what you need. You need to be proud enough. Like, I don't know if you guys, for some reason, the QAnon doc popped into yes. my head, but the Q dude, it's like, you need to like years later, you need to be like someone who like, so the 666 fix. And you're just like, I don't know. Like you need to give a wink years later. You can't do it the night, you know, the week leading up to.
Right. No, they're too excited. Well, I also read that the brothers that, not the main host, but the brothers that were involved that kind of got it. I'm probably going to pronounce the name wrong. The Maragos brothers.
Yeah.
That
the Greek
were
brothers. Yeah.
The ones that told their whole family were partners because they were in the vending machine business. They were partners with the host.
Yeah.
They were all in the same vending machine business. Gosh. And, you know, I mean, of course, when you're in the vending machine business, why not fix some numbers?
But I remember yes. there were like these vending machine kingpins like back in the day.
That was another byproduct of like, you know, the state trying to have the market, like the monopoly on these gambling things. Because at bars all over at least in my neck of the woods in PA, there's all the video poker machines. So that would be like for entertainment only. But obviously, you know, the bartender and like those machines would pay out cash. It just they couldn't oh, wow. advertise it openly. So that's exactly where the Margos brothers like. And I knew this dude Bubbles, who was like a bookie, like a lot of people
oh,
in my
Bubbles.
Family and stuff are bookies.
Oh,
Bubbles from Wilkes-Barre. Bubbles was a guy who ran one of these vending machine things. And yeah, you'd have like pinball machines, whatever. But the money makers there were the video poker machines. So they would set those to have a certain number of payouts. And then they'd flood the bars. Like every bar in around here had a video poker machine. And occasionally they'd get busted. Like the LCB would come in and be like, oh, this machine is paying out cash. Like they'd have someone undercover come in and catch them. But most owners of bars would be like, yeah, the fine is worth it. Like I get enough money off it. It's just like a little gambling machine that like pays out.
Oh, so these machines were illegal.
Yes, yeah. They were illegal. Yeah,
they weren't supposed exactly. to give cash. They're just supposed to give like a fake token yes. or something.
Like they'd say for entertainment only. And you're like, yeah, it's so entertaining to just watch like
Monopoly
video
money.
Cards coming. Yeah. Yeah, Monopoly money. No one's going to sit there for hours with
no,
that.
Pennsylvania no, Pennsylvania is very rigid about that stuff. So you have to go to like a state run store to buy liquor and you have to go to yes. a special beer distributor to get beer. Like you can't even buy beer. And then everything's closed on Sundays. It's wild.
It is wild. It's a puritanical holdover here in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Come on,
sure.
Pennsylvania. You're a mess. Just let it out.
Get with it. Until just, Mohegan Sun came along. And then it was yeah. like all bets were off. It was like, yeah, all right. The casino's here now. Now that's all fine.
Is there one in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I went
that.
To Syracuse and we love Mohegan Sun and we were close to like the Pennsylvania border in some cases. And I remember is Mohegan Sun. It was like this gem of a thing in college.
Yes, I imagine. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like you're like whisked away to like Atlantic City, not quite Vegas.
You are. You're like, I'm fancy. I'm 18. Watch out, world.
I'm gonna see a show and hit the blackjack tables.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't have those poker machines. We didn't have a Mohegan Sun, but we did have the bingo tickets.
The instant bingos, yeah.
What are those? Is it Keno?
No. Austin had that in Massachusetts, but bingo tickets are like these pull apart tickets that you get and they have like tabs on them and you pull apart each tab and if you get three of the same, you win. And those
like
are
a scratch off.
Yeah, but
yeah,
you
it's
pull
like a,
them.
Yeah.
It's the different.
Okay. Yeah, they peel. You don't scratch, you yeah. peel.
Wait, you could fake. If I worked at a convenience store selling those, I would just shine a light through all of them and figure it all out.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
Well, right? The cardboard, I don't know if you could shine the light. You could probably do like a little half peek, like a little, yes. little half peel peek.
Or
yeah.
like have a steamer a little bit and like have it bubble up.
Oh, damn.
There you
guys,
go.
Guys, give me a lock. I'll pick it. But like, I really think you could put it up against a window because sometimes UV light, you can help see.
Yeah. Next turkey party. I go to turkey parties around Thanksgiving with my family. Next one, I'm
going to come and gobble, gobble, rub you all blind. Yeah.
The night before, Katie's just in the basement with a flashlight, just slowly.
And a steamer. And
an iron, a steamer. Yeah, just slowly
I'm
milking.
Like, don't tell my son this. He'll repeat it.
It's also very low stakes, though. I would say you're earning your money there on that hustle, because it's like the top prize on those is like 50
50 bucks. Yeah.
That's my kind of low stakes. Though. Like, I don't want to go to prison, but right. I'll take the street cred or the slap on the wrist.
Totally.
But what's so crazy about this is that I was reading that they were all from the 666 lottery thing. They were all convicted. And the head guy, the host, still pleaded not guilty to his deathbed. And all the other people took a plea deal. And they got really small, like, sentences and fines and kind of like a slap on the wrist. And yep. Harry, the host, got 2 years. Well, he got sentenced, I think, to 6 years. And then he only did 2 years. I mean, they just really wrecked his life, basically. Wow. They made an example of him.
He stood his ground. Yeah. He was kind of like, he's like, let's put the whole system on trial type of thing, from what I remember of it. Yeah. It was like that.
You're all guilty.
He's like, this whole thing's a scam. And he's not wrong, but I mean, again, it's like, yeah, obviously what they did was very, very specifically trying to game the system, but yeah, he never admitted it. That was one of those things where they're like, yeah, there's a lot of pride in these situations, which I find funny too. Cause you're just like, if you're on to the next hustle, I think this was like his grand thing. It's like, you know, he had a gig, like he was working. So this was more, I think, almost like a fun, like cat and mouse. I think to him, it was a little bit more even than the money, maybe.
Yeah.
Like mentally challenging and exciting.
Yeah.
It said they were supposed to have a payout of like 1.18 million, which would be 5.59 million today. So that would have been a fuck ton of money.
It is. That's not peanuts.
No.
The drawing produced the number 666 and the record payout of 3.5 million, which would be 10.9 million today. And then 1.18 million, which would be 5.59 million, went to 8 people in the scam. Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah, 8. So the Ocean's 8.
Did that mean, though, that those people, those 8, probably had a significant amount of tickets that all said 666? Because if 14,000 people have similar 4s and 6s, but if these guys have an enormous amount that they're getting millions from it, they must have bought like hundreds of tickets, thousands of tickets.
A lot of tickets. I think you can also put down, there's different plays you can do where you like box numbers that pay out more. So there's a lot of different, it's almost like kind of like, in like horse racing where you pick like win, place, show, you know, you pick so you can kind of like parlay to get paid out more. So I bet they picked certain ones too, that they probably bet a little bit more than just like a dollar straight. Like a straight play is the 500-to-1 payout. But I think when you start doing boxing, you pick specific numbers coming up in different ways. But mm-hmm. I love that the 666, you know, when they were doing this, they're like, all right, so there are a few different scenarios, but they had to really just feel extra special that it came 666, because it could have been 444, 464. So I'm sure they did all those combinations. But yeah, I bet you they went big on the 666, because why? How could you not?
Because it's fun.
I love it.
And then I also read that it said that investigators pulled the phone records that they called from the studio. Like, this is the other thing. Like, hubris is so big. Like, they were so excited. They're telling their family, friends, and they're doing it from the studio phone line.
They just think they're so cool.
They really do.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to ask you two as well, since you do this all the time, how many scams do come crashing down just on hubris alone? I would imagine a lot of them, right?
Depends how smart the scammers are. Like, these are some dumb scammers.
Yeah, right. So yes. We have done some scams where there's a lot of hubris involved, but it's very high level after years. So like Anna Delvey, we always joke about that. Like people said something was off because she claimed she was super wealthy, but her hair always looked like garbage. And they're like, nobody that wealthy would have garbage hair. Or like an MLM person has this huge scheme. And then it turns out that they're sending everybody to Mexico for plastic surgery. So that's kind of like a fishy thing. Like sometimes it's a very small detail. We haven't covered too many like bonehead moves like this.
This is a bonehead. Making calls bonehead from the studio, straight bone.
I love it.
But I think also the culture is different. So like now things are a lot murkier. You know, there's all these like little scams. You know, it's like, oh, like if you're talking about an MLM, it's like your downline. You have to bring people into the pyramid so that you can make money off what the people are doing. It's not as overt and you're getting scammed in so many different ways. You know what I mean? Some
right.
People aren't bragging about the hustle because everybody's hustling.
Also, these guys in the 80s walked so we could run. Like, they really fell on their face. So people now have multiple email accounts. You know, they have multiple phone lines. They call from, like, all kinds of payphones. Like, I do think these guys who failed gave scammers so many new ideas.
I think you're right. This hustle seems almost quaint in comparison to
the
modern day. Yeah.
And I can't believe they only did it once, like today.
Well, that's what I wonder. So there's also a lot of whispers on that, too.
Yeah, because I think in those brothers, that big, huge, talkative family must have been doing some things.
There's something. Yeah, there's something else going on here. I would imagine, too, over the years now, as the stakes have been raised on these lotteries. I mean, because even like that, this seems like a shit ton of money. And as it certainly is, even adjusting for inflation or whatever. But even just now, I'm like, you got like, you know, getting into the hundreds of millions on,
totally.
And it's still the same technology with the balls.
The balls,
so it's just a matter of getting
stopped.
No
one's dropped the ball
balls
yet. Get
no,
a new
it's
thing.
It's that Art Director's grandson. Yeah, a triangle come flying out of there.
Give me anything. A trapezoid. Yeah, I just think like, you're totally right that the format of the gambling, the Price is Right of it all has not changed. We still love a Plinko. And
yes.
They could completely, but the money is skyrocketing. Like regular old states, counties, cities are doing millions of dollars, which you would have never dreamed of before.
No. And crossover stuff like with, you know, with the Mega Millions and the Powerball and stuff, that's multi-states getting involved. That's, it's a lot of money at stake for there to never have been another one of these. I think like you said, they laid the track work so that future hustlers in this lottery game were just like, well, let's not make calls from the studio. Let's start there. Let's go to payphones. Let's at least like not have like, yeah, a
burner
super
phones, beepers, like
burners. Yeah, they're all over it.
Wait. I want to change the subject a little. Murph, what do you think of the QAnon doc?
I thought it was, I loved it because I liked that it didn't just focus on the people who were, you know, I liked that it went as far up the ladder as as it did. I preferred that because I'm like, I know enough people around who are at least flirted with that. I'm like, you know, a lot of these, you know, disillusioned people who might have just been on the fringes of the queue. I'm like, the psychology, that's interesting, but I kind of get how, like, you know, we can only reach a certain level where everyone's like material conditions have not changed and no one's basic needs are being met, that people just get real weird online. Like, that's not that surprising to me. So I love that they kind of went like up the ladder to be like, who the hell's actually pulling the strings here? So I thought that was fun.
Yeah, Katie, you didn't. The QAnon documentary is
I have no idea.
A documentary about, you know, QAnon, the fucking weirdos online, the political weirdos.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So it's this documentary about who is behind it. And there's like this guy, this one guy, and then this guy and his son, and they're all blaming each other and framing each other, and they're all the weirdest people you've ever encountered, all of them. Yeah. It was crazy.
The characters were off the chart. Yes. I mean, any good doc, you want good characters. So they delivered on that.
You need good characters.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
Oh, okay, so, that's so interesting. Because that's what you would expect. I would expect somebody who, like, has a collection of like five guys rappers in his house. Like, just like something like very weird.
They collected
the watches,
pens.
The pens.
They collected
the
pens.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm like, these guys collect things. These QAnon guys.
Absolutely right.
Nailed it. Yeah, they're and Sue, did you think, like, what my takeaway from it was, is that, like, so this is like the 4chan guys, like this 8chan, these are the guys who like created those message boards, the father-son duo. And I, my takeaway from it is that it was that, and then it got hijacked at some point by the political operatives, by your like Bannons, your Stones, like into the Trump inner circle there. I feel like it might have started as something else, but then they realized how much reach it actually, they were clearly using it to leak information at some point. Like, they were giving a lot of, Trump was giving a lot of winks to that. I feel like.
I believe that. I would believe that.
If not directly, at least like they were very aware of the flow of information there, and they saw it as an opportunity that they could get stuff out into that demographic if they wanted to. I don't know.
Oh, for sure. That's, I feel, true. Like, there's tons of research behind that they would say, like, well, where are extreme rightist people going? What websites are the most popular? Where are we, like, where are the Russian bots harvesting? Like, I feel like like they would completely be like sort of browsing that whole area and then saying, this is perfect. These guys already like us. They're impressionable. Let's jump on it and feed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There
well, there's the controversy.
Things that were like too coincidental to actually that like the administration was doing.
By the administration?
I don't know if there was, I don't know if they needed to be necessarily. I think it was more of like a power thing. I think they liked, obviously, the son too, specifically, just loved the idea of like being with his, like, you know, robot sex dolls and everything in his palace. Like, there was a lot of the father son duo was really something else.
Fucking weird.
Really, yeah.
Guys, I gotta watch this. I mean, I'm creeped out by it, so you just have to tell me about it.
It's kind of fun and breezy. It doesn't leave you in the muck too long, I would say. So,
speak for yourself. Creepy. I got so mad every time a different man came on screen. They were all infuriating. Every single one of them.
They're all just terrible dudes.
They were all terrible.
When you mentioned it, I was like, it's either run by a very, like, constipated white man, or it's run by a very suppressed white woman who's in Utah.
I think
those are all constipated white men. Well, pretty much.
Yes. I also love that at some point it was like hijacked, because it was that dude, that Australian dude, who was kind of like Q's voice change. Like, everything changes at a certain point. So I also wonder if it was more than one person too. It seemed like maybe, or at least it initially was someone else, and then they kind of hijacked it and kept him tied to this 8chan message.
And it sounds like that would be a competitive thing too. Like, if you believe you're a mastermind, if you're convincing all these people, if you're getting so much web traffic and attention, and then somebody else comes in, I feel like they would be competing with each other.
Yeah,
having not seen or know anything about this.
No, that's like you're two for two having not seen. Yeah.
Yes, there's a collection and they're competitive. You're absolutely yes. right.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It's a tale as old as time, really. The players have been changed, but the game is the same.
Yeah. Sorry, I completely derailed us. I just wanted to get your take on it.
I really love it. I love that so much. Are there, so Murph, growing up, like having heard this and stuff, did it pique your interest in sort of scams and things? Were you, what did you think as a kid when you heard all this happening?
I thought, yeah, I it definitely piqued my interest in just kind of always seeing that there's people playing the angles on everything, really. Another thing that comes to mind too is Night at the Races. Sue, I don't know if you've ever done one of those out Erie way, but they're also very popular.
No, what's
here.
That?
So this is,
what is it?
So Night at the Races is there's a company that has horse racing footage, like old horse races, and you don't know where the races are from or what they are. So you order a package. Back in the day, it used to be VHSs. So they would mail.
I love this.
Yeah. And you get together at like a fire hall or, you know, wherever, a church basement or something. And it's like a fundraiser. So everyone comes in and you put, they project on the big screen and they put up these horse races and everyone goes before each race. You pick a horse and you can sponsor a horse beforehand or whatever. And then in each race, there's like 8 horses. And you can go up to the booths and place your bets beforehand and pick which horse.
I love that.
It's a really fun evening.
Also, the horses have already been abused. You're not worried about them getting currently being abused. I like that it's vintage abuse. Yeah.
Yeah, these are all vintage. Yeah, these are all glue factory horses.
They've been done and done.
Yeah, they're now being used as the glue for the tickets you're buying. Exactly. There's no more future abuse, which is fun. So it lets you off the hook there. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about it, though, is the way they do the odds. So based on who bets, because these are random. So like normally in a horse race, there's a favorite. You know, you're like, well, this is the horse that's probably going to win. So that you get the odds there. It's like, oh, you got 3-1 on this horse. Or if you want a long shot, you can pick a different horse and you get paid out that way. The way they do the odds here is based on how many people bet on each random horse that you know nothing about. It's like an old race, whatever. So you'd think like, oh, well, the easy hustle there is like you get someone who like knows the races, like they've
who's watched broken the VHS the seal. Tape. Yeah.
Right. But there's a whole presentation at the beginning of these things where you have to take out the V8. Now, when I was young, now it's digital. So I don't know how the hell they're probably shenanigans there. But it used to be that there was this unraveling of the VHS. They would open this box. It was a seal like that was on there. Mm. You have to peel it off and be like, these are brand new VHSs. No one has ever seen them before. We don't know which ones we're getting, all that. So that was the show there of like, this is all on the up and up. But the way what the hustlers would do that I noticed is that you'd watch. So however many, whoever bet the most on like the most horse, that would then be the favorite. So like people will stand in line and wait till the last minute and they'll watch how many people go in each thing. And they'll go, oh, this horse only because as far as you're concerned, watching this randomly, each horse has a 1 in 8 chance of winning because they're random horses. There's 8 of them.
Right.
So you're like, no one knows which horse really has the upper hand here. So you just wait and they go, oh, here are the odds. Like everyone's, you know, bet on this horse just randomly for whatever reason. They picked horse 2. So these guys will sit around and be like, oh, only like so many people bet on horse 7. So they wait till the last minute. And they go. So you see like a collection of usually the members only jackets. You know, they got their backwoods. They're smoking over in the corner.
Oh,
they're
waiting.
They're just like
indoor and then cigarettes they, all the way.
You got it. Indoor all the way. Oh, yeah. No, Night at the Races is a smoke. There's no non-smoking.
Very much an indoor event.
Yes. Yeah. Pre-COVID event. I mean, they're probably still doing them. But yeah. So you'd wait till the last minute and you'd see those guys like, oh, those are the people who like these guys are at every Night at the Races.
They're smart. Like, they're playing against the fools playing first.
That's right. That's right. They let everyone rush to the stalls and then they go in at the end and clean up. So
and everybody's betting on Dreamcatcher and then like Limpy Dick is the one that wins. And nobody wanted to admit
No one picked Limpy Dick.
Nobody picked Limpy Dick, but these guys don't care.
Uncle Carl got on Limpy Dick. I know my Uncle Carl had no problem. He waits to the end.
Uncle Carl believes in Limpy Dick.
He's not afraid of a Limpy Dick. He'll bet on anything. He's not.
It's the truth. Yeah. So like growing up, it was very much a gambling culture. So I think between that, like the video poker machines, I always just saw like a lot of people playing the angle. So this particular scam was just very, was in the lore of like all of that of like, oh man, imagine, you know, being able to rig the balls. And in such a, like we said, like in a very just almost like, you know, very charming? Straightforward, charming. Yeah. I think it's
kind of adorable.
Just a classic.
What did your dad think about it? What was his response?
He was pissed.
Yeah.
Anyone who consistently plays was a little bit miffed by this. Didn't stop him from playing, I'll say that much. Couldn't stop
playing.
Well,
then I read they had like officials and they had much more restrictions and sort of monitoring. And it's like, why didn't you have an official
to begin with. It took
eight
local news guys sale. To do it.
Wait, Murph, you mentioned that your dad won a few times. Did he win big? What did he win?
No, he just won. He won the, like, he won, you know, the 500-to-1 pay. Like, he hit the exact number like a couple of times over the years. But if he's playing, like, and again, he gets into the boxed pick. So he's dropping like $15 to $20 a day sometimes. I don't think for the whole stretch. Sometimes he would just do like one ticket or whatever. But he's trying a couple combos. A number comes to him, like, whatever, you know, whatever the gambler's superstition stuff is there. So he also doesn't bet on sports anymore. He's like, he had an issue with that way back in the day. So this is the way he's like, we'd go back to like harm reduction. He's like, I'm just doing like, I need something to wrap, like just the daily number. That's
it.
It's
really
all
confident,
I bet on.
Comfortable.
I'm not
with
betting
that.
On the Eagles anymore. Yeah. I'm just betting on the daily number.
No crooked teams. Well, I love that because it's also, well, first of all, there's that like sense of once you do win a couple of times, you're like, well, this is my game. Like, I know that at some point I'm going to win again. So there's comfort in that. It's stable. And once they already figured out and like messed up with this gamble, he probably was like, it's a much more safe game to play. I think it's very smart that he's doing it.
I think it's also fun. Like, you think about, like, if he's betting $5, like, that's a $1,500 pay. So, you know, when you win anything, $1,500, like, that feels like something, even
it's
though,
fabulous.
You know, your mind doesn't go back to the, like, well, I'm already however many in the hole that I've been for doing this.
You never think of a hole. You never think of a hole.
There's no hole.
Don't think of the hole.
It's no hole.
All balls, no holes. Just keep straightforward.
That should be the Pennsylvania Lottery's slogan. Yes. All balls, no holes.
Pennsylvania.
Thank you so much for bringing this to us.
This is a fun one. I felt like a low stakes one. I figured you're tackling probably a lot of the big ones out there.
You know, we are tackling some horrific things, and I really love a charming stealing
scam. This is charming.
It's adorable. And I love a paint project. I'm like, I could do that. I could paint something.
That art director.
I know. Yeah.
The art director is the real hero.
The art director is fascinating. Don't you? Because I'm also thinking of all these people. This lottery thing had been going on for so long. Do you think a bunch of them were just like, you know what? Fuck this station. I'm painting on these numbers all day and night. Nobody, like, I'm sure that when you're behind the scenes, when you know how everything gets made, you get really pissed off and resentful. And you're like, any idiot could do this. And then you're like, well, I'm not an idiot, so I'm going to do it. And
the egos.
Like a stagehand was involved. I just like how everyone is a member of the team.
Yeah. No,
who's got a bone to pick with the lottery.
Yeah, they all exactly. Yeah, they put together everyone who has a gripe over the years with the Pennsylvania Lottery, and they brought them together. I feel like Nora Ephron might have done a movie that was like loosely based. So I'm thinking this is ripe for a feature treatment here.
Oh, for sure.
There was in 2000, there was a film Lucky Numbers with John Travolta and Lisa Kudrow, loosely based on the story. In 2006, Game Show Network aired a documentary about the scandal. With anecdotes. In 2013, The Good, the Bad, and the Baby from Castle's sixth season. Who watches that? And then, that's it. Not that much.
Yeah, I feel like it should get the full tree. Because I think I remember that movie. I might have to watch it again just in honor of this scandal here. But the only reason to watch it, because I feel like it was very forgettable. And I think it was loosely based, but not really. Like, you want the, like, Ocean's 11. Like, you want what – that scene you just painted there with, like, the art director. It's like, you want to see all that. You don't
you
want just
do.
That.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And also, like, I'm positive. Like, as somebody who just was, like, painting some picture frames today, you know the art director really fucked up a bunch of the balls before he made it. Yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing, like, when you're dealing with paint and art and, like, balls are circular. Yep. It's not really an easy material. Nope. And then I read that he took all the balls and burned them all afterwards. So then he burns up his own masterpiece.
His own creation.
Yes. He burned them in his own house. Yeah.
The fire department showed up.
Dramatic.
It was a whole. Yeah.
They're like, Larry just burned all of his prize balls.
And that plastic just stinks to high hell. Like, he burned that indoors. That can't be.
Oh, God.
I just think it's so.
That's where we got the hole in the ozone layer.
That's why. Well, and the news anchor guy, they also said that he was really into bowling and he hosted a bowling thing and like did the bowling sports and he was a fan favorite. The whole town loved him. His son like wrote in his obituary, he was not guilty, wouldn't go anywhere and everybody basically was crazy about him. But when he got out of jail, he got a job again with the bowling alley people, like the bowling.
Oh, yes.
He got a job with the bowling product salesman and as a salesman for bowling products, which is just so sweet. Like, it's kind of a happy ending.
I think so.
It's such an integrity. He went back to bowling.
It's heartwarming. Yes. So
one
good.
Of the more adorable scams out there.
Adorbs.
It is. Thank you. Thank you, Murph.
Murph, this was such a delight. You. And guys, check out Murph's podcast. This is huge. Come on, Scam On. We're going to have links in our bio and we're going to put media up and pictures. So it'll be really easy for you to jump on over there and give Murph all of the wonderful love you're giving
us. Yes. Go listen to Self Medicated. Thank you.
Thank you both so much. It was wonderful.
And Murph, where else can people find you besides your cool pod?
Just MurphMeyer.com. I just got back on the socials, Instagram at MurphMeyer.
Good for you for taking time out.
I took some time out, but I'm back. I'm good back for you. I felt like now is as good a time as any to dive back into the fray.
Yeah, it's garbage. Just come on back in.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this very special episode. Thank you, Murph. Thank you, everyone.
Love Murph. Just the best. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Katie. Thank you,
Kate. Thank you, Sue. Kate. We're really thankful.
Oh, I have to recommend, if you're not watching Generation Hustle on HBO Max,
what is
you
that? Gotta.
It's so good. 10 episodes about every scam.
What?
Going into detail about every scam. They have Anna Delvey. They have like some random shit you've never heard of. Like, it's so good. And it's really well done.
I'm obsessed. And guys, if you have anything that you are watching or reading and crazy about,
please let us know.
You know, I love a phone call. So you can call our Hot Tip Hotline, 347-509-9414.
And if you want to email us, you can email us at scamwellpodcast@gmail.com or visit scamwellpodcast.com for back episodes, Patreon, merch, all that good stuff. We would love to see you over there.
And thank you guys so much. We love you and we'll see you next week. Thank God for you guys that we get to do this podcast for you.
Yeah, you're great. Yeah, see you later.
Bye. Bye.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.